Planning Commission meeting, October 19, 2022.
What is called to order? Can we start on my right side with roll call?
Yeah, Rex Stevens.
Rob Price.
Renee Morgan.
Steve Johnson.
And Thomas McIntosh staff.
Are we ready to do the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, comments from the audience, which we have no audience, so I think we can pass on
this first with that.
Old business. Our housing needs analysis update from the city staff.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. I'd like to approach our platform for a visual aid here. We had, and I know we've been talking on this subject quite a bit, but I felt that it was imperative to share some of the updates that we received, even just this week, after our meeting.
After the meeting?
Yeah. What we've been doing, because staff, needless to say, has had a lot of heartburn on all of the acreage that has been included. And I'm going to try to go out here to highlight just kind of what we're talking about.
Now, some of the stuff you're talking about, was it due to any of the questions that we asked or the discussion?
No, this discussion started between staff and DLCD, Department of Land Conservation Development, back in March.
Oh, okay.
When we started this work program and this grant program, we started trying to have the conversation in regards to the detriment. We knew that there would probably be a surplus. What we were surprised on is that there's a 227-acre surplus. And those of us that work here, live here, know that that's probably not too much of an accurate number. So, just today, we received word and confirmation back from Josh Lombombard. He is the Southern Oregon DLCD rep. He's the guy that does the decision making. We received confirmation that all AO zoning can be dismissed and taken out of our HNA, which is a huge victory. The reason is not because of constraints, topographical issues, nothing like that. The reason is our approach indicates that as a permitted use in the AO zone, you could get a house if you maintain 10 acres and it has to be in conjunction with a permitted use, meaning a farm use. If you ever look at the AO zone, take a look at those permitted uses. It's farm operations, forested. It's fish hatcheries. It's stuff that's very resource. The makeup of the AO zone belongs in a rural area, not inside our city limits.
Right.
So DLCD looked at this and they said, since the housing situation is attached to a use and 10 acres, it should be taken out. In addition to that, we received almost a preliminary blessing to take the safari out and the Cow Creek area to the north. So significant strides, I feel, as staff in our progress here. And we haven't started that yet. And we have it in email form. We don't suspect these DLCD reps will go anywhere. They've been in there for a lot of years, or at least Josh has. He's been the one that I've worked in my 8 years of planning. He's been in there the whole time. So huge for us, a huge strides for the city. So when we're talking about that, go ahead. Did you have a question?
Well, I was going to ask you what that dropped our total down to.
Yeah, Steve just got the confirmation today, so Faust, so he's redoing it.
Oh.
They're redoing the maps, they're rehashing everything. And you'll notice by this map here that if we're taking out all the AO zoning, that's not just eliminating the issue with the safari, but it's eliminating a significant acreage area in the Smith's property to the southwest in this 181 acres. Mm-hmm. We also have this area that's being dismissed. We have a 40-acre piece down here.
Where is that piece at? Is that past the park?
This piece?
Yes. Yeah.
This is down, it's down Parkinson Lane. If you go down Winston section all the way as south as you can go.
Okay.
And then you take a right down Parkinson Lane.
Okay.
It's down there.
Oh, okay.
They've got a big, what is it, pot growing place down there?
Yeah, it's hemp. They've had a long-standing operation there for a few years. But in addition to that, our work program dictated that we had to go back because they had questions on, well, how did it come in? It came in 1993, and because the goal to bring the safari in to the city UGB in the middle there was Cow Creek land. So by virtue of that process, Cow Creek property, tribal property, came in too. So the question from DLCD was, is it in tribal trust? We answered, of course, yes. It has been for many, many years. It's been in tribal trust. The reason that's important, just so for the benefit of the commission, tribal trust area property does not have to follow any local rules. They follow federal rules.
Right.
Which is how you get casinos in Oregon, despite the fact that they're illegal in Oregon. They go on tribal land, right? So that's the reason why that's important. And zoning becomes irrelevant on tribal land because they follow federal rules. So there's no use of zoning it. There's no use of it being in because we have no control over how the development is taking place.
So to us, it's basically a dead zone.
Yeah, I mean, they could do something with it, and it might contribute in some regards to the community, but it won't from a taxation standpoint, and it won't from a regulatory standpoint.
Right.
In any regard. So what I see in the future, and this is right now, even though we have confirmation, is just sheer trajectory conjecture. What I see the city limit line doing is following this down, coming down here, going up, and then coming all the way down here, just kind of following this all the way over and excluding all
city limits, not the UGB.
City limits,
yeah.
And this is our prime area right here. And if we go in closer, you'll notice what I was talking about yesterday on Woodland. You'll notice the size of these lots over here. And it's the same situation. And Looking Glass Creek is not a huge detriment. It's not like the South Umpqua, where we'd have to cross and take land in.
Okay, that is out by Brockway School, or is that before? Is that at the Adair Bridge?
Yeah, so Brockway School is this piece here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Blue piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is all... The properties that have the brown color are in the urban growth boundary. Beyond that, where you just see aerial, that's county jurisdiction. But this is, all of this here is the prime area. Now, we don't know when it comes down to it, what area we're going to grow in. We're going to have to do an analysis.
Right.
But in the future, because we're going down this road, DLCD has already presented us with the question, okay, we're giving this to you. You don't have to factor it into your HNA. You don't, and we're fine with supporting your urban growth management change. But what are you going to do to transition all this AO zoning? Well, first we're going to put a policy in there indicating that we're going to look at how to do that with the help of our HNA. But also, we're not going to transition all the AO just to one specific zone. We're going to do a surgical approach to the city. We're going to take, for example, here's 40 acres down here. Well, we may have a deficiency in the next 20 years in, let's say, high density. So we'll change that high density. And then we'll come over here and we'll deal with this. We'll do a surgical approach and an analysis in that regard. It's the only practical way to do it, really. We have to take each AO piece case by case.
And what do you figure we'll have to look at, what, about every 5 years to see where our needs are at that time? Or should we go farther out?
We would do a larger work program to transition all the AO zoning.
Okay.
We can't hit specific properties because then it becomes quasi-judicial. The property owner would have to put in. But if we do all of the AO zoning at once, it's a city approach, and it could be triggered by the city. So
right,
we have to do it that way.
But we still will have to look at it, what, every 5 years or 10 years?
It's good to do that, but the program requires either internal staff doing it or you get on a grant program. This was a grant program. So we were able to, and if we're able to get on that grant program every 5 to 6 years, then we will.
The area where the Noah's Ark used to be that the tribe picked up, that's not tribal trust.
They are going through the process of putting it into tribal trust.
Is there any way that we can block that because it was commercial property?
The easy answer is...
wishful thinking.
I know.
The easy answer with tribal trust is no, because it's a federal process. And people have tried in the past, but the federal government that has jurisdiction over that has said, we will take your concerns under advisement. Mm-hmm. Do they do that? I don't feel like they do that. But... it's something we can certainly, we would have had to get involved early on, and they're already well into
right.
this stage. It's not a quick process.
Yeah.
It takes months and months to put it into tribal trust. They have to do their own work to do that. But they typically they always justify it.
Do you know anybody that works for the tribe that does in that area that the would be more amiable to work with and maybe at least talk to us about doing something like that?
Yeah, all of the people that I work at the tribe are very good to work with. I don't know anyone that facilitates the tribal trust process. We could probably find out. Travis Hill is our point of contact. He handles all the real estate development for the Cow Creek. We also have a council member that works for Cow Creek, Alicia Sullivan.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And so, yeah, and she does a good job. That is certainly something we can look into. The ARC property has been a concern since it went into ownership, because we knew that would kind of be the precedent. It would go in that direction.
That's some prime housing area right there.
Yeah, I mean, well, that's commercial.
That's very
commercial, but we could put multi-unit dwellings there.
Yeah, they would have to be upstairs of a commercial operation. But in regards to that property, it wouldn't be able to be part of this work program in terms of taking it out. It's probably going to have to stay in, just because it's on the south end of Looking Glass. Sharing this, and I have a long string of email that I can forward to anybody with a lot of information from. So we had Sean Edging, who is a housing coordinator with DLCD. We had, of course, Josh Lombard, and then there's another gentleman, Trevor Young. Never met him or talked to him, but he was invited into the conversation, CC'd in, and he had a couple of responses. But he at the end, he just ended up agreeing with Josh. Take it out. We'll support your UGB change in the future.
But that's really good news for us. I mean,
it's great news. Yeah. And
sure makes your job a little bit easier.
Well, hey, look, this comes with a long line of just months of effort with trying to get them to respond, get them to understand what the detriment is here. What we also, I think, need to take into consideration with this program, just because the safari is supporting what we're doing does not mean that we shouldn't communicate the fact that we are in a very robust and longstanding partnership with them.
Absolutely.
That will, the integrity of that partnership will maintain. And it's imperative that, and I think Mr. Van Slyke knows that. We've communicated that to him, and they support the direction that we want to go.
Well, Wildlife Safari and Winston, I mean, they're basically joined at the hip, no matter what we do. And,
yep.
You know.
Might as well embrace it.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of years of building that relationship, and what we are doing is continuing to build it. And that relationship needs to continue to be on an upward trajectory. And the reason it was brought in originally is to augment that partnership. They understand now that in order for us to move forward, we have to have things in our city that don't undermine our plans from a purely analysis standpoint. And they get that.
Well, doesn't it also benefit them in the long run?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't benefit or hinder them because they're a nonprofit. They don't pay taxes. There aren't really a whole lot of amenities that go up there in terms of sewer and water.
But about the only thing that would hinder them would, if they wanted to grow, to expand, that they would have a problem, right?
They could do that in county jurisdiction just as easy.
Yeah, I keep forgetting.
Yep. They will likely be, if this all goes through,
Their zoning now is at Winston designation. They would likely be given a farm forest or some type of resource designation that would allow a wildlife habitat type operation as a permitted use.
Good. So basically like a fish hatchery or abandoned wildlife park or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those are good examples. And they usually, things like that usually take place in rural county areas. So good news in that regard, but still a lot of work to do. We're heading in a good direction. And all of this kind of started because we randomly took a call up and we said, hey, we've got some outdated stuff. Help us out. So we got on this grant program and we started down a good direction. So,
just a quick personal question. Any regrets taking this job?
Not at all. It's a dream job.
You have worked your butt off on some of this stuff, and I mean it.
We've all done it together. So appreciate you guys' participation in it. And it's
but you're the one that puts in the hours.
We just ask questions and read the paper.
You guys are an action-taking body, and we bring good stuff to you, and you guys have made appropriate decisions that's helped it to be pushed forward. So thank you for that. There's a lot of appreciation. But we got a ways to go for this program. But we're very excited about the news and different stuff, and I don't think 3J Consulting is upset at all that they have to go back and kind of redo some stuff, because now we're going to get a more accurate figure of our surplus.
And even though we're kind of unusual in that way as far as the way our city and urban renewal district is, it's our urban growth boundary is, it's still something that they can put into their thing, because there are other cities up the valley, etc., and in Southern Oregon that have that type of designation on their properties too.
Mm-hmm.
And so it will aid them and give them a good foot in.
Yeah, I think so. It starts a really good precedent. And Commissioner, you make a good point. The sheer focus on this conversation in the last 2 or 3 months has been astounding, because we have went from, this is a long shot, to, okay, let's dissect this and figure out how to get it done. And we think you're going to benefit the area from a comprehensive standpoint. So I agree. That's a good observation.
So in the long run, this has been a tremendous benefit for not only the Planning Commission, but for the city and mm-hmm. for the future. It was well worth doing.
Yeah. It's been a program that's really helped move us in a better, more positive direction. And the idea was different in 93 when it was when we brought all of it in. There was a different precedent then, and I think that it held merit then. But now, in the efforts of figuring out just sheer growth, we had to ask the question, and it's kind of steered us in this direction. And it's an overwhelmingly positive direction to me.
Well, I know that when Rex was mayor and I had just started on the Planning Commission, we had already been looking in this direction, because we knew that the only way we could go was out Looking Glass or out 42. So we knew that these changes were coming, and we, you know, we're already talking about it then and trying to make plans, and then 2008 hit and everything got pushed back. But I remember Rex was working hard on this then, and you know.
Yeah.
It's a good thing. Now, we had, how many acres did we have on that report?
Surplus?
Yeah, surplus.
227.
This right here will probably drop us down to around 100.
That was the number that I was thinking. Yeah, absolutely. It's going to carve out a large chunk, half, if not 60 or 65%, which would put us down to the 80 to 100.
And all that's going to do is open more doors, right?
It's going to give us a more accurate figure, but then it's going to give us the opportunity to say, if we do transition AO zoning, maybe we can fulfill our need internally. and make it a little easier. Or it's a two-pronged approach towards expanding, taking more of woodland in, and transitioning all that AO zoning. I've been singing this song for a lot of years. Resource zoning has no business in an urban area. That's the thing. It's there because when we adopted our plans back in the 70s, there were some transitional farm uses that wanted to be recognized. They were recognized, but they've long since been mitigated. They're no longer a factor. We don't have those operations anymore.
But in Oregon, that's the greatest part of Oregon is that rural development, mm-hmm. you know, in the small towns. Mm-hmm. So we've had to work with it, and now, you know, we're trying to transition out of it and
yeah.
change it.
And I don't mean to belabor the point too much, but we face some tremendous challenges as it relates to growth. I mean, we are bordered on almost all sides by impractical area that we can't grow in. To the north being green, the south Dillard, and then the east either floodway, or if you go across the river, we have high class one or two soils that are great for farming. And that's tough to bring that into a city anyway. So we really we've talked about this. We only have one direction. And so those are challenges that cities typically don't face. You have several options because you have all directions, I mean, that you can go in. And you typically don't have a city that's bordered on three sides by a river, a significant river. So forces us to deal with how do you do it, right? Which direction do you go?
Do you have any idea of what we're looking at as far as maybe a time frame of when this is adopted?
The H&A?
Yeah.
Oh, but yeah, so by the end of the year, if not January, I understand that may not run concert with the legislative session. There's options there.
With these changes?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep. All they have to do is make some tweaks to some numbers and, yeah.
See, I thought it was going to add time on.
Well, again, it, internally, we can make the decision on waiting on adoption or whatnot, and it's really up to the Planning Commission. So from now on, we're not going to be doing any joint sessions, anything like that with council. It has to first be placed on your agenda. So in good conscience, if you feel like there's things, and I went and checked after we talked about the session, there's not a lot of legislative items that are coming out. Beyond affecting rural county, there's a template dwelling provision that's being changed. There's another provision having to do with a boundary line adjustment, but it also only affects rural county areas. There's nothing as it relates to housing that really. There's one that affects like 25,000 population or over, and we don't. I mean, Roseburg is a lot closer to that. So. Yeah.
Really gonna hold us up any.
This session doesn't look like it's going to affect us too much. So, but in good conscience, if this body wants to wait to adopt until after the session is presented and we have all items on the table, we know what they are, then that's your decision.
Well, what is your professional opinion? Do we wait? Do we continue to study it?
Well, right now all of the bills are close, if not already introduced. There's some still trickling in. Do I think that there's anything that'll come in at this point that'll affect? No, I don't think that there's any prolific reason to stall adoption. What we're doing is there are things that we want to do subsequent after adoption with what we have adopted. So what we are essentially doing is making the decision to stall that too. We want to continuously be in a grant program. We want to always be embedded in a grant program. And we want to be working through that.
And by adopting it, that would push us forward into that even more?
It would mean that we can use that towards whatever our goals are subsequent.
So do we, well then what's the process? I mean, other than I know we got to vote on it, but.
We have to do public hearings on it, and it has to go to council after you. You're a recommending body for that.
Right, so it is public, we can't just, the stuff that's already been done, the study and stuff, we can't just say, okay, we adopt this, and we have to do public hearings on it.
You would recommend its adoption to city council.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not going to adopt. Right.
So what,
Yeah, what happens is they're going to make the changes, and all the stuff that we looked at yesterday is the full legislative changes that would go into our comp plan. It would supersede our existing housing needs analysis. And what we would do is package that up, and we would do a notice to the city, to the papers, to DLCD, to the public in every regard. We have to do a legal notice that a hearing is going to be on this date. And then on that date, we would present the materials, and then you would make a decision on if you want to recommend it for approval to council. We would then do the same thing with council. And it would be solidified and augmented with an ordinance.
How much? They have to have like two public readings and all that kind
there
of
has to be
right?
two. Technically, there doesn't have to be two readings, but it can be adopted, but there's no reason to declare an emergency.
There's
no reason to declare an emergency, so two readings are typically what happens. So in all, if we do the first reading the same night that we do the public hearing, you have two meetings with council on the materials prior to full adoption, and then you have a 30-day appeal period for any ordinance.
You're talking about probably at the earliest February.
Yeah, January, February. Yes.
Does that give you enough time to prepare everything?
Oh yeah, I'm ready now.
Yeah. Oh.
They need to give me that packet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. I got my arsenal ready to.
Do that tonight. We can vote tonight, right?
You can't tonight.
Oh, we can't.
It hasn't been noticed in any fashion.
Oh, okay.
I gotta go to the public first.
Yeah. Because I was thinking if all we gotta do is just. Yay or nay to send it to...
We don't even have their updates and the changes from the DLCD conversation.
That, then we have to have a public hearing, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. We have to do notices for the public hearing. The public hearing will probably happen, I'm guessing, the first week of December. It might have... December gets tough. So the first week of December is probably the only theoretical date that we could get a quorum in here. Due to the holiday and all that. But we want to get that in, and then we can get it all of our notices in through the holiday, through the dead period. We're giving people time to chew on it, 35 days of DLCD again, all that stuff. And then in January, we could have a public hearing, and then the second reading in February.
Do you have any update on any people submitting applications for the two openings?
No.
Because that would help. If we had extra people.
Yeah, we need to broadcast that a little more.
I've been talking to one of my neighbors about it, who is an ex-contractor of Lida. And he's got some reservations at this point. So we'll see.
Okay.
Because Rex is going to be gone in December.
Hawaii?
Well, yeah, that and Virginia.
Okay.
All right, are we ready to move on to some new business?
Thank you, yes, Madam Chair.
All right, let's talk about some economic opportunities analysis.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of commission. So just a quick tidbit, what we did with the HNA, we are going through the preliminary beginning process of trying to get on grant for doing that with our commercial and industrial areas. So similar to the housing needs analysis, we looked at how many residential acres we're going to need to fulfill our housing needs. The EOA, or the economic opportunities analysis, does the same thing but with commercial and industrial land. It looks at a 20-year supply of how much commercial and industrial zoning we're going to need to fulfill our needs within the next 20 years. Now, this threshold, we are fully anticipating that it's going to be a lot lower, particularly with commercial land. There's not as much out there as you might think. So we are in discussions with DLCD, or the Department of Land and Conservation Development. We are in preliminary discussions with them to get on one of their annual grant programs similar to the HNA. In order to get that program started. And it would happen the same way as we did the HNA. We would get approved for the grant, we would get an award grant letter, and then we would avoid doing any kind of financials and hiring our own consulting firm. They would use one of theirs, similar to how they assign 3J Consulting. And 3J has done splendid. They have a group of consulting firms that they contract with that they all do a pretty good job. One of the bigger ones is Eco Northwest. They do a tremendous job with these types of things in the area. But I wanted the commission to be aware that we are now attacking this side, because there are several remnants of our comp plan. The housing needs is only one component. We want to go through and update all of them and keep them active. And so it's that goal of continually being within a grant platform and program. And so the EOA is the next appropriate one to try to tackle as it relates to the comp plan. Other things staff can internally try to tackle. There are, you know, other areas of it. Or we could look at doing the same grant program. So happy to take any questions, but I wanted the commission to be privy to our efforts on that.
Well, I think you kind of answered my question was, does this fall under the same grant as the housing needs analysis? And it doesn't. It's a whole new grant.
Yeah, it is. It does and it doesn't. I know that a lot of people don't like that kind of answer, but the reason why it does is because it's under the same umbrella. It's called a technical assistance grant. It's a planning grant, so it's an analysis type thing. But it is a different animal because commercial and industrial are not, you know, apples and oranges compared to residential, right? So it's a different set of criteria that they look at. There's the same type of ORS standards they have to follow to update the analysis, but the grant program, well, it'll be a little more challenging to get. But we're going to put our best foot forward, because we think we're a good candidate for it.
Does already using the grant for the housing needs analysis, does that give us any foot in the door, so to speak?
Not necessarily. I mean, it still falls under the same DLCD rep. So we have a great rapport with Mr. Lombard. If we are unable to get a technical assistance grant, then we need to look internally on how we're going to budget for it, because it needs to be updated. We need to. Part of the reason why we need that is because in 2025 our urban renewal district will sunset.
Ooh.
So, and URA areas don't only have to do with commercial and industrial. They can also affect residential lands, and you could do that. But we really need an EOA updated to understand fully how we're going to tackle redoing our URA district.
Do you have any idea of what it would cost the city if we had to finance that ourselves?
The EOA, it could run anywhere from 10 to 30 grand. In my experience, that's what I've seen. The city of Roseburg updated theirs. As a matter of fact, at the LOC conference, I ran into Andrea Zielinski. She's a city council member for Roseburg. Terrific gal. And she said that they did theirs 3 or 4 years ago, and it cost them like 18 grand. It's not terribly steep,
yeah.
But if we would prefer a grant.
Yeah. I think every city would.
Yeah, the financial aspects of that can definitely be ironed out, but it's a worthy thing to tackle, to approach.
And you're already getting the wheels turning on that?
You bet, Commissioner. Yeah, and we've been talking to them about it for a couple of months, and you know, at first it was kind of okay, you're just getting done with your H&A and kind of cool your heels, but now we're getting to where we're concluding with it, we're getting to adoption stage, we want to start the process for the EOA, so we're always embedded in a grant program.
You know, the whole thing, I think the reason is, I see the need for this is, we're running out of time. You know, our population, our housing needs analysis, you know, shows us that we're running out, and we need to get this done sooner rather than later. If we wait another 5-6 years, all that's going to do is amplify the problem that we're already having.
Yeah, if we approach our URA district in 2025 and we don't have this EOA updated, we're going to kind of be trying to recreate a new urban renewal agency with one hand tied behind our back. That's what the situation is. We need that data and that analysis available to make more comprehensive decisions on the URA. Of course, we know some things make sense already, but anyway, we can definitely continue to get in that. I'm going to have more things for you in subsequent meetings. you know, hopefully, if we do get on grant, it will be sometime next year because they only approve them once a year, and you get into their process. I was hoping we could catch it this one, but we were already in a grant program with DLCD, so we have to, you know, we have to just kind of approach it as they would kindly allow us.
But, cool. At least you've got a direction for us to head.
Okay, are we ready to move on to Ronald and Sheila Bly's request for annexation of a half-acre unit of land lying outside the current city limits, and with the Urban Growth Transparency Planning Department file number 22-W006.
Yep, go right ahead. Thank you.
All right. This part of the meeting is for public hearings. The Planning Commission will hear one public hearing tonight. The public hearing is in regards to a request for annexation inside the corporate limits for the City of Winston, Planning Department file number 22-W006. To ensure that these proceedings are conducted in a fair and orderly manner, state law has established rules and procedures governing the conduct of land use hearings. I'll now explain the procedures we will follow. This hearing will be conducted in the following order of events. We will first establish for the record the parties that are entitled to party status. Party status is important because it determines who is entitled to participate in the hearing and who has the right to appeal the Planning Commission's decision. People eligible for party status include the applicant, the property owner of the subject property, and owners of property within 150 feet of the subject property, or any other person who can demonstrate that they will be specially, personally, adversely, and substantially affected by the results of the hearing. We will next establish for the record that all members of the Planning Commission are able to participate in the hearing in a fair and objective manner. The Commission will then hear the written staff report. After that, the applicant's testimony will be heard first, followed by testimony from parties in favor of the application. The Commission will then hear from those parties who wish to speak in opposition to the application. After all testimony has been given, the applicant will be given an opportunity to respond to the testimony of the opposition. Testimony instructions. I want to stress that all testimony, including rebuttal, will be directed to the Planning Commission. Direct exchanges between opposing parties will not be allowed during the hearing. Questions may be asked at any time by members of the Planning Commission. Questions by the parties or city manager may be allowed by the president upon request. Testimony, arguments, and evidence given must be based on fact and directed toward the applicable criteria in the comprehensive plan, zoning ordinance, or subdivision ordinance, which the person believes to apply to the decision. All evidence offered may be received. Testimony and evidence given in this hearing should be of the quality that reasonable persons rely upon in the conduct of their everyday affairs. Any evidence received shall become part of the record of the hearing. Failure to raise an issue in the hearing, either in person or in writing, with sufficient specificity to afford the approving authority and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue, precludes appeal to LUBA based on that issue. Pursuant to Oregon Statute 197.796, at the failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designate to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. After all testimony has been heard, the Planning Commission will have an opportunity to ask questions of the parties. The hearing will then be closed, and discussion limited to members of the Planning Commission and staff. The Planning Commission will forward a recommendation to City Council for their consideration. The Planning Commission will be a recommending body for this hearing. The request is considered quasi-judicial and will need to be forwarded to the City Council for final review.
Correction, Madam Chair, that it's not quasi-judicial. It's it is administrative in nature, and Planning Commission can make the decision tonight.
Okay.
Apologies.
Okay, does everyone understand the hearing procedures as I have described them?
Yes.
Please note that these hearings are being tape recorded This is to provide a full record of the hearing. So it is important that only one person speak at a time and only after being recognized. After you have been recognized, please begin by clearly stating your name and resident address for the record. I will now open the hearing for the request for annexation inside the corporate limits. Planning Department file number 22-W006. We will now establish for the record those persons who have party status in this hearing. For the record, I will note that the applicant and the city each have party status. Is there anyone present who is an affected agency or owns property within 150 feet of the subject property who wants party status? Is there anyone who may be specially, personally, adversely, and substantially affected by the outcome of this proceeding who believes they are entitled to party status? Has staff received any written requests for party status?
I have not, Madam Chair.
The Planning Commission is concerned that this hearing be fair to all parties, both in substance and in appearance. Therefore, it is important that we establish for the record that all members of the Commission are able to hear and decide this request in a fair and objective manner. Do any members of the Commission have a financial interest in the property which is the subject of this hearing? No.
No.
Do any members stand to gain or lose any financial benefit as a result of the outcome of this hearing?
No.
No.
Have any members discussed this matter with the appellant or any other interested party prior to the start of this hearing?
No.
No.
Have any commission members met as a group to discuss this matter prior to the start of this hearing?
No.
No.
No. Do any members wish to disclose any facts which might create the appearance that they may have a conflict of interest or are otherwise unable to participate in this hearing in a fair and objective manner?
No.
No.
No. Does any party have an objection to any of the planning commissioners participating in this hearing? Now that the planning commission has been qualified, we will proceed with the hearing. Staff report.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. I want to double down on my previous comment. A annexation process is quasi-judicial in nature and does have to be forwarded to council for approval and has to be ratified by ordinance. So wanted to state that for the record. I thought that maybe there was an artifact in the script, but no, it's correct. So thank you. Just want to enter into the record staff exhibits 1-6. I will read what they are into the record. Number one, staff exhibit number one is a notice of the public hearing that went out. Number two is the property owners that were identified within 150 feet that received notice. Number three is the staff report, which has been administered. Number four is the copy of the consent to annex form. Number five is a vicinity map. And number six is a copy of the assessor's map. Now, the applicant, Ronald Bly, is requesting annexation of a 0.5-acre property into the city of Winston in order to facilitate the full connection of sanitary sewer. The applicant and property owners existing on-site sanitary waste system is currently in full failure, or was in full failure, which necessitated an emergency connection into the city's gravity main line located on Winston Section Road. There are two manholes and an 8-inch main line that runs in Winston Section to where gravity sewer was available. The applicant property owner approached the city with a situation of their system failing and the desire to hook in. They did, as a consequence, agree to annex into the city, which is the basis for this public hearing tonight. The subject property is located in the northeastern portion of the city, directly off Winston Section Road, and is contiguous to the city limits and within the urban growth boundary. The subject territory or property is currently developed with a 1948 single-family dwelling. The applicant is wanting to annex the remainder of his property or the property entirety in order to authorize connection to the city's sanitary sewer system. Just a few points of order. The annexation application was submitted and deemed complete on August 4th, 2022. Notice of the public hearing before Planning Commission was given in accordance to Winston Municipal Code Section 154.180. Notice was sent to the affected property owners of record within 150 feet of the proposed request and to service providers and government agencies on August 22nd, 2022. And an additional notice for a rescheduled public hearing was sent September 27th of 2022. The subject property has one primary point of access directly off Winston Section. No structural development is proposed in conjunction with this application process. The subject property does not have access currently to the main line, but as an emergency hookup, the connection has already taken place with the signature for the consent to annex. For the benefit of the council, or excuse me, the commission, I'd like to explain the different options for annexation. There's three ways that you can annex. Number one, by vote of the majority or a portion of the city. Number two, by consent, which is what we have before us. Number three is by virtue of the island annexation process. This is all housed in ORS 222. The property is currently zoned residential low density, or RLA, and the comp plan designation is 3 dwelling units per acre. There are several findings of fact for the benefit of the council. There are no conditions of approval. In conclusion, staff would recommend approval of Winston Planning Department file number 22-W006 and recommend offering a recommendation of approval to be forwarded to City Council. Happy to take any questions.
So this has been completed as of right now?
From a physical standpoint, yes.
Yes, that's what I meant.
Because of the emergency nature of it.
Right, mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, do you have the map there? I'd like to see exactly where it is on the map.
Yep.
I have six exhibits. This would probably be the one that you'd want to reference. It's that one.
Okay.
You're welcome to pass around the exhibits at your convenience.
There's a vicinity as well that kind of pans out and shows you where it is in reference to that area of the city. I apologize, we could not print those out in color.
Where's your crayon, huh?
Should have got those out. Markers.
You know, Christmas is coming. Get you a new set.
Need a new printer. That prints in...
Now, since we have no audience today, there's no one here, can I move through?
You'll want to announce for the record that you're mitigating those portions of the process due to the fact that there are no applicant or rebuttals or any of those types of things.
So I'm going to mitigate since I have no audience at all. Was there anything from the Planning Commission that I need to address first?
Looking at that map, is that the only one in that section of property down there where it's located across from Pepsi that's asking to join in across that one road? I forget what the name of the road is.
Pepsi Road?
No, it's a driveway. Back in there. Right there.
The street that runs to the 42.
That's Winston Section Road.
It is also Winston Section that goes in there.
Section.
Yeah, and there is no entry. It's a dead end. It's dead end through there.
But the properties across from it is in the city limits. correct?
They're not. That whole patch of properties are in the urban growth boundary that you see. If I could, you can't really tell from this map, but if you'll allow me to approach, I can show you visually here.
So in other words, we're kind of putting this one property into an island.
It's not becoming an island because it's contiguous to the city limit line.
Okay.
Meaning the city limit line is here, right here.
Okay. That makes sense.
So this whole patch is in the urban growth boundary.
Okay.
And you have a patch all the way out here.
Yeah.
That's in the city limits. So I would, like I said, you can't see it because the red line is usually the city limit and the blue is the UGB. So that's typically, so this is inside city limits here.
Mm-hmm. This that's what I was talking about.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So we would not be creating an island necessarily, but the fact of the matter is this whole thing is an island.
Yes,
and we
right.
could have probably included it. We figured that out later, but
too late now.
We're going to do another round.
Yeah. that was where I was going.
Yeah.
You know, taken a notch out of an island there.
Mm-hmm. We've taken a notch out of, I should have listened to you on how to explain it. That's it.
Yeah.
We've taken a notch out of the island there.
And are there any particular ways that we can take in Pepsi?
Well, if we were to take in that group via the island process, then Pepsi would be an island.
That's
at
right.
that point.
Yes.
It would essentially be, and it's meant to be more or less a domino effect to where we can right. Systematically approach them. Would we be able to get them to consent to annex? I don't know. I don't know anybody from their operation, so therefore there's no rapport, so I can't shed any light on
right.
that particular. I'm sure that they wouldn't be overly thrilled to pay city taxes versus right. county taxes.
Right.
But that's a great point. You definitely bring up a great point. There's a couple of other people that have brought up when we were doing our island annexation process, the fact that and we were looking at so much at specific properties. They're bordered on three sides. Mm-hmm. I think that group would definitely qualify.
I think so.
As an island.
Did we just not look at it or was it overlooked?
We took it to the city attorney, and there are two things that we tried to tackle with Mr. Forrester. Number one is based on the ORS standard, these are the ones that I think would qualify, and we wanted him to confirm or disconfirm that. The second thing is we wanted him to point out ones that we were missing, that we weren't, and this is not a passing the buck, but it's not a typical process to do an island annexation process. I was only a part of one other one years ago. And so there are so many moving parts to that we wanted the city attorney to dive in and help us out. Well, needless to say, there's one other area of the city that probably counts as an island too. So we'll just have to do another round. I mean, that's the...
But by taking this notch and adding it into the city adds more validity.
Yes, I think absolutely.
Cool.
Okay, well, just to clarify, since there is no applicant here to present testimony and there is no one here to speak in favor of the application or in opposition to the application, I'm going to pass through that. Are there any other things on the record that need to be present an additional time? All of this is all of the maps and everything are already.
They're in the record.
Right.
Yeah, we have verbally put them in the record, and they are physically in the record here.
Okay. Does the Planning Commission have or staff have any questions of anything? All right. Once the hearing is closed, there can be no further testimony received without reopening the hearing. Do I have a motion to now close the hearing and begin discussion by the Planning Commission?
So moved. Second.
I don't have any questions about it. We'll
have to do a full vote on closing the public hearing.
Oh, okay.
We got a motion and a second, Madam Chair.
All right,
a full vote.
Go ahead.
To close.
Close.
Yeah. Aye.
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 Thank you.
Sorry.
Yep. That's okay. Now open for discussion.
Now do we need to do a motion?
So the public hearing has been closed. That was the motion that just was executed.
So this automatically gets sent to
City? No, you will have now the public hearing is closed, and now communication is limited between the commission and staff, and now would be your decision making time on recommending moving to council or denying.
We need to make a motion to accept.
To send a recommendation.
Yeah, there's a sample motion on the on the last page of the staff report for you.
Okay. Move for the Planning Commission to adopt the findings of the staff report and forward a recommendation to the City Council to proclaim the said 0.50 acres property owned by Ronald and Sheila Bly to be annexed to the City of Winston according to ORS 222.125. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay.
Other business?
And yeah, I was going to say, any other business?
Any business? Well, there's some things I'd like to talk about.
Well, yeah, that's it.
The first one is on the TSP. Like to know if there's anything we can do to get ODOT to change the speed limits on 42 at the intersections of Looking Glass and Broadway.
Haven't we already tried to tackle that before?
Yeah, well, thank you, Commissioner, for kind of bringing that to the purview of the agenda. There are two things that we could do. We could approach it from a city standpoint. Anybody, a citizen, whomever can also approach ODOT. They are a public jurisdiction. It's usually a stronger case from the jurisdiction, and I don't have any problem with that. There are definitely some speed issues there. But they are like every other governing body. They do things based on justifications and engineering and analysis. I don't think we've ever had that conversation with them. And it's something we can start it, certainly, at the behest of the Planning Commission. Speeds there.
So when you say we can start it, what would starting it mean? Just send them a letter from the Winston Planning Commission?
Starting it would probably be staff sending an email to our ODOT contact to say, how do we start the conversation on the speeds and tell us the process, which I'm happy to do, to Virginia Alant. There's a guy that I worked with at the county. He is now working for ODOT. I've got a pretty good rapport with him. He might be able to help us in this regard.
Basically, I think we could cut down on our safety issue. Right? It becomes a safety issue at those intersections because they're uncontrolled. And number one, we all know that you come out of Looking Glass on 42 and everybody's still doing 55 miles an hour. And my suggestion would be to move the 30 mile an hour sign that's up by the winery down to where the 45 mile an hour sign is now, which is 100 yards or so before the intersection.
Yeah.
And also on the other side, even the whatever that is, eastbound side, I guess, of 42, there's a 55 mile an hour sign right near the intersection where you come out there. So everybody's already doing 55 by the time they get to the intersection on eastbound. And move that sign further up the road and put a 30 mile an hour sign somewhere before the intersection to kind of slow the people down at that intersection and take away the safety aspect.
Add
to the safety.
Absolutely. That situation is why I don't come out on Looking Glass onto 99 to go north, because number one, you don't know when you're going to be able to get out of there.
That's right.
The second thing is, are you going to be able to safely be able to pull out of there?
Exactly.
And Yeah, so I always come out of City Hall and just take the main roads all the way up because I know that I could turn safely and then progressively go up 99 at my leisure. And I'm guessing there are a lot of other people that do that too. But look, that's an excellent point, and I think that it's been talked about for a while. And
I'm just wondering.
The same thing down at Broadway, in lieu of a turnabout or a roundabout down there, change the speed limits on either side of that intersection, because right now you're going 45 going into it when you go westbound, and you're doing 55 when you're coming into it going eastbound. Slow people down. I grant you that probably not many will slow down to what it says, but if they slow down 10 miles an hour instead of 20, it would certainly help the situation.
And that is the way we're growing.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that when we start the conversation, they may may potentially respond that the Rolling Hills 99 traffic light that they are putting in may mitigate some of the issue because they have to stop at the light. And then, but then again, when it's green, you're dealing with the same issue if you don't change the speed.
Yeah, you would have to, so the speed never gets up to that 55 mile an hour speed. You would want to then just, once you leave that proposed signal there across the bridge there in green, once you leave that and heading south, if you have that 45 mile an hour right there, what is that, Hellwave or something like that?
Hellwave, yeah.
Yeah, and then slow it to 45 there, and then right before Looking Glass Road, slow it to 30. A
couple hundred yards up the road, so we have a chance. Not less far.
But he's absolutely right, because they're going to have to do something there, otherwise it's going to look like a drag strip.
Do you have a time frame on the light situation, or is it just mainly...
We just got an email the other day on it, and it looks like some engineered plans are near completion. I apologize, I'm missing an exhibit. Should say exhibit one on the top.
Right here.
That's hey, no problem.
Down.
You want to pass
down.
It down? I probably did that. We just got an email on it to where I think they're pretty close to completing engineering. And that's something that we could forward out to the Planning Commission if you all want to be privy to it. And we need the city manager responded that we need to have a meeting on this now that they've sent something out. Because once we caught wind of it, we got on the horn with ODOT and said, you want to share anything with us? Because it does affect us in some regard. But,
so both of those intersections are in the city limits, is that correct?
Yeah, both are in the city limits, but neither of them are under the jurisdiction of the city.
I understand but from a safety standpoint, I would think the city would have some kind of a say as to what's going on there.
Yeah, so the corporate limits only allows you to do certain things. If they have jurisdiction over the road, then they are the stewards of the speed in that regard. If we had the roads under our inventory, then Winston PD can potentially regulate and say, what do we need to put on this? And that's what we do. But for 99 and for Brockway and for 42, we're at the mercy of, ODOT or the county.
Anything else on this? Okay.
At the economic development meeting on Monday, or on Wednesday last, there was a lady who came in asking about mobile home sizes within the park. Mm-hmm. And she said, I think she's talked to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
About whether a single wide can go in the park that's right down the road or on the, that rose. There was some conflict about what you said versus what Mr. Bauer said. Mr. Bauer gave her a different answer than yours.
Ah, I see. Yeah, so that's been kind of a running issue, and the question has been, because the code's not clear on this, the question is does it have to be 1,000 square feet and multi-sectional on a lot in a mobile home park, or is it just independent lots in the city? And that's been the problem. And what we've tried to do is open up a larger discussion on it. It was my understanding, because the code doesn't say only outside of mobile home parks. It just gives that provision. A mobile home is required. The structure is required. So it indicates like it's blanketed no matter what. So we have tried to work towards that issue. And that's the benefit of the city manager. He's able to be the deciding factor. So if that's how he interprets that code, then I'm glad that she got that answer, because now Rosewood can potentially move forward in that regard. But mobile home parks are traditionally different because you have a lot of things that are alleviated. You have infrastructure that's alleviated. You have structural sizes, setbacks, all of that are reduced. And so I'm also not surprised that the we would have arrived at that answer. So I did talk to Mark on it. He brought it up and clarified those types of things, and I'm glad we did.
Is that a section of the code that maybe we ought to take a look at and make some changes to?
Yeah, it doesn't deal with tiny homes either. So tiny homes can sometimes be constructed like mobile homes, but therein again, we have an issue because 1,000 square feet and multi-sectional. It's meant to tackle this whole single-wide thing. It wants to, double wides. We want to beautify our city and
right.
Perfect it,
Maybe we need to clarify it.
Clarification on that.
Yeah. But that's where the confusion came in. The code doesn't say only outside of mobile home parks. It just says if you're going to do a mobile home, this is the size and this is what you have to do. So
is that something you would recommend making changes on and moving forward with, or is it really not something that's pressing?
Sure, it would need to be folded into our next round of legislative amendments. Absolutely. If there's a question on it, if you look at the code and it's confusing, and especially if we have an ironclad interpretation from our city manager, then we need to carry that through and clarify it.
When do you foresee another round of the legislative amendment workshop?
We have a group of them now. We have they are worked on consistently, and I would guess that in the next few months we should be able to roll those out and start having Planning Commission look at them. It's a random cocktail of different stuff. The tiny home situation, there's some language in there on accessory structures. We're dealing with areas of the subdivision code that need enhancements. They need, things here and there. And so we always want to have a round of legislative amendments going, because there's always ways you can improve your code and bring it into this century, right? So thank you for bringing that up. It's a good point of clarification.
Anything else? Okay, for the good of the order. I would like to address that one. So I'm still kind of new at all this stuff, but what is for the good of the order? What does that entail?
That's an open discussion that the commission can have with the commission body or with the audience, I just want to inform this and bring this to your attention. It's not necessarily anything for decision making. It's and council has it too. Go ahead.
Okay, under good of the order, what is the current status of the old Vandermark property for the additional multi-use dwellings up there?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. It really should have went on the agenda, to be honest. So I was approached last week by a individual that instructed the city that she has reclaimed it through foreclosure. Her name is Felice Dubois, and she was an investor and went through the foreclosure, stalled the foreclosure process for a while, but completed the process of foreclosure. So she is now in ownership. We made her aware of the demo compliance issue, to where the removal needs to take place. She's reaching out to contractors. Her goal is getting into hands of someone that will do something with it. and to sell the property. So the property is no longer in the ownership or under any stewardship of the previous gentleman.
Does that include the buildings down on Sherry Street?
No, that's a different, I think that they're still in that property owner's ownership.
Mm-hmm. So where does that put the designation? Does the designation revert back or does it...
No, it doesn't. It stays unless there's a new application of a quasi-judicial nature.
I was kind of curious on how that worked. Mm-hmm.
It runs with the property once you do it, the city process. And unless someone files a new application to try to change it again, it doesn't matter. Property owner can change, it will remain in the same.
So in other words, we're kind of back to square one with it.
Well, I mean, it's still high density,
right.
And whenever it gets put on the market, someone will have to come in, purchase it, and develop it in a high density capacity.
Okay.
What is going on with the Elephant Walk properties?
Well, you can see some physical activity over there, certainly. They finished and they discharged it into our sewer onto the plant. And they are doing full removal now. Removal is contemplated to... they were supposed to be removed today.
They're
Wednesday.
Gone. The tanks are gone.
So now what's going to happen is grading, landscaping, and pouring a patio just kind of in the middle there with sidewalk panels that connect it in that area where all of those are at. So I think that we are rapidly approaching that.
I know that I was... every name in the book because I told them there's oil tanks there because there used to be a gas station there. And I told them also that there used to be the old mill housing projects down there, kind of like the ones down in Dillard, the little ones by the post office. And some of them have been joined together there on some of the Fisher property back behind the 99 and in those trees there. That's where some of them were placed, but that's what that whole area was before it was a small travel trailer type park. Well, they had underground oil tanks at that time, and that's the way they got heat for all those cabins. And I told them at the same time that I told them about the gas station that was there.
Yeah, and I appreciate that.
I just want to make sure that I'm not trying to hold them up, but they've said, you know, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that. And it takes a lot of money to take and mitigate those types of things.
Yep.
But before they ever bought that, I told them when they were dealing with good on that property, mm-hmm. Take a look at it and have someone come out and do an EPA study on that land.
But
it wasn't done, and I'm glad to see them moving and getting the things done. I know that took a bite out of them, mm-hmm. But they have to do things and do things right. Mm-hmm. And I'm just hoping that whatever they do that other land, that they do run some scans and stuff of that to see if those tanks were in fact removed, because they were quite large.
Very big tanks, yeah. And I appreciate that, Commissioner. I think that based on the history there that I've heard, you're not the only one that tried to do them a courtesy in terms of what's taking place on that property and what they might look for. And you know, the environmental one study is an integral part when you're dealing with properties that might have had older development, because you just never know what's subgrade. And the rules that were in place 30, 40 years ago, we can no longer do it that way. But I was grateful that they were able to find a solution. They worked with Environmental Northwest. They came in, and instead of doing full removal and costing $80,000, it cost $10,000. To run it through an activated carbon system. Activated carbon being a very good process for removing impurities like that gasoline or oil or those types of things. And we got tests. We ran a meter on there and we got tests and everything came back non-detect. So it was a resounding success. It was clean, it was good, and then it was dispersed into the and went through full removal. So they've came through it, but they were given some good guidance. And I wish that they would have heeded your warning. It probably would have made it less cumbersome.
Well, it would have made the seller of the property, if he wanted to sell it, it would have made him have to take and do that cleanup, and it would have saved him some dollars and time.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Anything else tonight? I think then we are going to move to adjournment.
So moved.